This is a podcast from Minute Media.
And welcome, Pewter Peeps, into the Wednesday edition of the PewterCast, your number one spot for all things Tampa Bay Buccaneers, your hot takes, your otherwise, and of course, great conversations with those around the NFL that A, cover the Bucs, or B, are covering the team that take on the Bucs that week. That's Ren Dax. I'm Steve Carney. It's great to be here with you and joining us to talk Atlanta Falcons and their week two matchup with the Buccaneers is our old friend D. Orlando Ledbetter, the Falcons beat reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. D. Orlando, first off, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Ren and Steve. It's a pleasure to come on the show and always enjoy these Tampa Bay and Atlanta matchups.
Yeah, and this is going to be definitely a fun one for sure coming up here on Sunday. The first time the Bucs will have played on Sunday since the Super Bowl should be an interesting setup as we get going here on the PewterCast. It is sponsored in part by Manscaped. Manscaped, of course, is the group that allows you to take care of things in the male grooming type of way here. I have told this story way too many times. I had a guy when I was in the Navy that I worked with that thought that the razor that you used on your face was perfectly okay to use also to help keep the rest of the body clean. Not a smart decision. The smart decision is to use Manscaped with their new lawnmower version 4.0 featuring wireless charging, a new ceramic blade, and a much longer battery life. You can get the lawnmower 4.0 as part of the Manscaped grooming kit version 4.0. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code fansided20. And us at the PewterCast, we can get you 20% off your order and free shipping. Again, go to manscaped.com, promo code fansided20 for 20% off your order and free shipping from Manscaped.
All right, we got that out of the way. Dee, thanks for joining us again. And so let's just start here, okay? We had you on and we talked about the Falcons and, you know, where they're going and what could possibly happen and all this. And then Sunday happens. So, you know, we've talked, I think I kind of got you down personality wise. And so I feel comfortable asking this question. What the hell happened?
Wow. Yeah. Not really sure. Just trying to figure it all out. Well, the one thing was, you know, you figure you got a quarterback, you could run the ball, you know, and that should be enough to beat the Eagles. They were 4-11 last year, you know. You got a new defense, but they got, you know, veteran coordinator. You know, you should be able to get up in the kid's face and make them throw you a couple balls. Okay, none of that happened. None of it. They ran the ball for a little bit. That was it. But I wasn't surprised the passing game was off because they didn't play in the exhibition season. He was acting like the Falcons won the Super Bowl last year, and he got a veteran team that could just show up on Sundays and win. And so he miscalculated, you know, getting ready for the season, and he miscalculated with what type of team he had. You know, rookie coach, rookie mistake, went out and paid for it.
I was gonna ask, you know, with this being Arthur Smith's first game as the head coach after his time in Tennessee, you know, I think Arthur said the right things post game. You know, he said that he didn't have his players prepared. You know, but I think of that as mostly coach speak because, you know, most coaches would have said that in week one, especially younger coaches that know that this is probably going to happen to them at some point. Rookie coach, rookie mistake, like you said. So, I mean, how much blame do you put on Arthur Smith versus the players?
I'm going to put a lot of it on him, Steve, because he didn't play him in the exit. He got too many new variables, too many new things. You got six new starters on defense, five on offense, and you don't play them together for the first time until the opening game. That's on you. So Matt Ryan and Kyle Pitts, what did it look like? It looked like a hodgepodge because they never done it before. Whenever you, it's just like anything. You ride a bike, you know, you're going to fall down the first time till you know, ride up, get up and keep riding it again. You know, you're not going to win the Tour de France on your first time out. So it made absolutely no sense to me for them to not play their starters in the exhibition season. Okay, Tampa Bay, you won the Super Bowl, you got some veterans, you know, you're pretty good. You don't have to play your players. Okay, he's coming from Tennessee. They've been in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago with the playoffs last. Okay, that's a good veteran team. You probably don't have to play them. Okay, but when you're going to have 50% new starters and you elect not to, you know, at least run them out there for a couple quarters and you know, at least do the dress rehearsal thing, no surprise that they weren't ready to play.
You talked about Kyle Pitts, you know, came from the University of Florida, first round draft pick of the Falcons. A lot of Bucs fans are interested, you know, because there are also a lot of Gator fans. You alluded to that it didn't look good. How did he end up doing? Like, how did they use him? Sort of summarize the Kyle Pitts' game and how it showed up and maybe things that, you know, need to change. So I'm sure, like, the head coach was asked about his first round draft pick and how he looked in his first game.
Yeah, they didn't play him when they were running the ball. You know, when they had the two good drives early, because, you know, he's not going, you know, he's 245 pounds. He's not going to block the end or linebacker. So they put him in the slot the majority of the time. 75% of his snaps were in the slot. You know, he only had one catch for 1 yard at the half, I believe. Got one up the seam later. Ended up with four catches for 31, but he was an afterthought in the game plan. You know, by the time they're down, then they start throwing them the ball. So I'm sure that won't be the case this week. You know, is they're going to try to, you know, do what Dallas did, spread it out and hit the outside stuff, because right. You know, they can't block Vita Vey and Sue and Pierre Paul and Ghost and you know, the whole group over there. So yeah, he didn't do a good job of getting Pitts ready to go, but I'm like, it was the first time they could have went through this in the exhibition season. They should have at least went through some vanilla stuff, but he didn't want to show all his stuff, you know, being a paranoid coach. But I mean, you gotta, you know, save something.
I'm curious, D'Orlando, you know, you talked about the first couple of drives. You had a 14 play drive and a 15 play drive. The first two drives, they end up in field goals, but you only had 37 plays the rest of the game on offense. You know, it just blows my mind to think that, you know, a NFL coaching staff can be so lopsided on one side or the other. And I know it, a lot of it is that you're down two scores going into the second half, but you know, the play calling kind of made me scratch my head after the first couple of series.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of it either. But you know, it really hurt. The penalties really hurt. They're going in. They go up 14-6, and Marlon Jones lines up over the center, which, you know, you can't do that in Little League. So yeah. So then they like, okay, we're gonna go for two. So now it's a two score game. And with 2 seconds left in the first half. So you come out in the third quarter, but every time you move the ball, it was a penalty. They called two pick plays on back-to-backs. You had the one series where it was a holding, false start, intentional grounded. So, I mean, self-inflicted wounds really hurt. Whatever play calling we were going to see, it got buried in the penalty. So, you know, that was just but that's you expect. That's an exhibition game. So when you play the exhibition season, you get a lot of penalties. So when you go out and play for the first time and it's a bunch of penalties, that tells me you should have been playing these guys in the exhibition season.
Well, yeah, you seem to be very hammering that point home. So let's switch to the other side of the ball. The defense, you know, you look at the final score. If you didn't watch the game, you would say the defense played poorly. Is that true? Were there some other extenuating circumstances? Or again, is it just did the defense, you know, play in the preseason? What happened there?
Yeah, they got beat up there. The Philly tackles, you know, there's a picture of Brian Baldinger out there, and he's showing Lane Johnson and Matea doing life's work, he calls it, and they're just mushing. Lane Johnson just stands Fowler up and just pushes him to the ground like he's a transformer or something. And then on the same side, they're doing the same thing to JTN. So your two pass rushers are nullified. So, you know, they try to blitz and do all that, but the Eagles pick it up. And when they do get after Hurts a little bit, he scrambles and, you know, makes a play on you. So a lot of the passes went to the right side. You know, the zones over there, and it was just a, you know, just a bad, they didn't get any pressure. They got a couple stops on fourth down, so that was positive for them, but there was no pop, no excitement in that defense, and we were promised that they would be an attacking defense, but then they got stuck on the field too long, and, you know, the Eagles put up some scores, and you know, just kind of went downhill the whole thing when the offense kept stalling. You know, the defense was left out on the field too long. And, you know, that's just a bad formula for this team right now.
I was going to say that for a team that's supposed to have a pressure defense, Jalen Hurts really had a clean uniform at the end of the game. Only one hit, one sack. That's, you know, it. How much of that is – do you put up to the lack of pressure to Hurts' ability to get out of the pocket?
It's probably 90-10. The line blocked very well. So, you know, they got a good line. The Eagles are built differently than the Falcons. They're built around their lines. And the Falcons are built around the perimeter. So, and they haven't done a good job of building their offensive line or defensive line. And, You know, whiffs in the draft. We can go over those, you know, McKinley, Beasley, you know, going down the line. But so they did a good job of blocking. But then when they did get to Hurts and chased him around a little bit, he was able to get outside and find his check down guy and escape the trouble. He did almost put one up. He was running out of bounds on a 4th-and-4, and Grady's chasing him, and he jumps up and throws one down the field that probably could have got picked. That was a bad play. But other than that, you know, he did, that line did a great job of keeping him upright and steady.
Well, we've talked about, I mean, lopsided loss. So, you know, there's lots of blame to go around. You point a lot of fingers at a lot of people, you know, coaches, players. What went right? Like who looked good? Where can the optimistic Falcons fan on Twitter is saying, oh yeah, but look at this. Like what positive were gleaned out of that loss?
Yeah. Two things. One, the field goal kicker, he can make the field
there
goal.
You go.
He can get stopped in the red zone. And hey, he was the MVP last year. And the running game though, seriously, Mike Davis and Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, they had to get away from it when it went down two scores. But, you know, if you could run the ball, I think it was 26 for 124, respectable, 124 yards. They only went over 106 times last year. So, okay, you got a rushing attack. Okay, now that passing game that wasn't timed up right, get it timed up. And hey, maybe you got offense. And then you can get down the field. Now you can draft the highest tight end ever, and don't throw him the ball in the red zone. Okay, come on. Let's go. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think you would have done that in the exhibition season again. So you've got the makings. You know, in my mind, if I'm sitting there for positives, I was like, okay, if I could put all this stuff together, I got offense.
That's on the offensive side. Really, looking at the box score, the one name that stands out to me defensively is Deion Jones. I mean, you have 11 tackles, a pass defense. You talked about how the Falcons are built kind of on the perimeter. That's a pretty good afternoon for a linebacker.
Oh yeah, no question. That's what they you know, Deion is just two guys on that defense who've been Pro Bowlers, and it's Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones. A young cornerback might be pretty good. He's going to have problems with Brown probably this week, or Mike Evans if the Bucs figure out how to get Mike Evans going again. But Deion Jones was drafted to kind of match up with Kamara and Christian McCaffrey in the division, and by Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, and he's been one of their good draft picks. So you at least got a headhunter over there that's going to go show up at the ball and on a regular basis. So that was a good stat line for Deion, and a sign of good things to come. He's also going to be blitzing a lot here too for the new defensive coordinator. We didn't see that in the first game.
You talked about earlier how you expect the Falcons to sort of attack the edges like Dallas did, which was sort of the blueprint was put out last year with Sean McVay and the Rams in prime time against the Buccaneers. I think they only ran the ball 6 times. Dallas ran the ball like 10 times. Mm-hmm. So it's game day. It's kickoff. Falcons come out, and they're doing what you expect them to do. What are Buck fans should be looking for? What players? Like, who should they keep their eye on the Falcons offensively that could have a big day or are going to be key for the Falcons to try to win that game?
I would say it's going to be Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage, and Pitts, big guy. Because I think I would, since you know the screens are coming, I might try to slip Pitts up the field behind the screen look the screen and then shoot it up the sidelines to him a couple times. So that might be something that's there because, you know, you got to figure out how to attack that Tampa Bay secondary without getting Matt Ryan killed. I don't know how the line's going to hold up in pass protection. So I don't know how you run the ball at that defense either. Yeah. Which side do you pick? You go at Shaq Barrett or you go to the other side at JPP side? I don't know. So can't go at the middle. That's where your two best blockers are, Lindstrom and Matt Hennessy. So they were winning their battles against the Eagles. So they ran behind them two guys. But I don't think that's going to be there this week. So it's going to be you got to throw it outside. Russell Gage, Lamide Zaccheaus is another name. He's a little speedy wide receiver from Virginia, former undrafted guy. He could be a factor in this game too.
Yeah, I remember him getting some big time play when Julio Jones went down last year due to injury. You mentioned trying to throw outside and not getting Matt Ryan killed. I don't know how you can do that when Jalen Mayfield played as poorly as he did at left guard. I know you had an article in this about this in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and on AJC.com. What is the plan moving forward at left guard? Because they've had some serious issues at that position.
Yes, it's been a revolving door since Andy Levitre retired. They drafted Jalen in the third round this year. He's a right tackle out of Michigan. But, you know, for them, they got to play him at left guard because Matt Gano's out with some neck injury that they're hiding. I saw him in a neck brace, so I'm guessing neck injury. And then he's on PUP. And then Josh Andrews broke his hand in practice. And so now there's the third string guy's the rookie who never played the position before. And so they played him 125 snaps in the he did play an exhibition season, but didn't look good first time out. They still like him. They think he's going to play eventually, but, you know, can you do it on the job training? Do you want to do that against Sue and Bea? Bring him back the next week against the Giants maybe. And I'm sure they're going to have some people too, you know. But today is the Tuesday tryouts around the league. I'm fully expecting to see a bunch of guards in here. Some veteran guard, whoever's like 31 and just retired, hopefully they've been staying in shape and they can go out and get you through a game till this kid's ready to play. But I was surprised they didn't pick anybody up on the waiver wires because, Matt Ryan's been beat up the last 4 years. He's over 40 sacks. So your number one priority, if you was going to stay with Matt Ryan, should have been to get him some protection. But, you know, they didn't do that. They got the shiny object. They got the the fancy tight end. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they probably should have got the tackle from Oregon. But, you know, that's probably a whole nother podcast for us.
Yeah, it would be. And, you know, no offense to Orlando, but Buck fans don't care about Falcons draft. but I hear you. That's definitely something to talk about. I got one more. I got two more. I always do this. I got one more, and then I always have one more. Something piqued my interest that you said. You called the head coach. I'm sorry. I can't even read my own handwriting. Superstitious? No. Well, no.
Paranoid.
Paranoid. Yeah, yeah. Paranoid. Can you, like, why do you think that Arthur Smith is paranoid?
All coaches are paranoid. They think
that's true.
Somebody's spying on them all the time. They think, you know, he probably didn't want to run the show as offense.
You got to freeze.
You know, it would have.
Yulander froze. See if he comes back. There he is. Okay, go ahead. Start over.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all coaches are paranoid. Again.
Wait, he's back. All right. Are you there?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. I just think all coaches are paranoid, and they try to make everything a strategy, you know. Like if a guy's hurt, it's like, you know, that they want to hide the injury to so the other team can't attack them in that spot.
Right.
And so forth. So yeah, you know, all of them are paranoid in my dealings.
Okay, so nothing. You don't think he's overly paranoid?
No, that just goes with the territory. Yeah, you know, they always think Tampa Bay's reading the paper, trying to get strategy out of the newspaper. Come on, stop that.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I mean, he's got to do a conference call with the visiting writers anyway. So you should know. Come on.
And then they're going to say, you know, we're going to ask them, hey, are y'all going to attack the edges like Dallas? Oh, no, that's strategy. I'm like, 50 million people watch the game. So, you know,
secrets out.
You know, what's the problem with answering that question?
Yeah, of course we're going to go after the edges. That's the weak spot. Well, that's what we've seen. And of course the Bucks don't have Murphy Bunting this week.
Right.
Why would we not go after a third string corner or a fourth string corner at that point?
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's funny. It really is.
All right. We've been on with 20 minutes. Thank you so much. Actually 23. So here's sort of our final question.
Yes.
It's game's over. Atlanta wins. How is that going to happen?
Oh, if that happens, that meant there were about 15 missed tackles.
Okay.
And Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley had over 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns apiece.
Okay. Okay.
And Deion Jones had a pick 6 like he did against Jameis a couple years back.
Yeah.
Okay. So 35 points, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And defensively, like, are they going to, like, obviously they're going to blitz more, but what has to happen defensively? I'm not saying play a perfect game, but, you know, say hold the Bucks to 24 points. Like where we look, like, who's going to be the star? Is it going to be because of the pressure? Is it going to be because of the back? Is it just going to have to be like turnovers?
It's going to be that the corners are have to hold up. Isaiah Oliver's got to take away Goodwin, or at least not get him 9 for, you know, he's going to get 14. He had 14 targets last week. So, you know, you're going to get some action there. Right. Don't lose Antonio Brown like they did last year on the fly route. Don't lose him. Fabian Monroe, stay on top of him. He's kind of fast. And then AJ Terrell, stick Mike Evans, take away some of Brady's targets, get some knockdown passes, maybe pick one off, but play them receivers tough because he's coming to them.
That he most certainly is. And of course, you can catch D. Orlando, of course, at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You got the Bowtie podcast going on. What you got coming up on that?
Bowtie Chronicles podcast is coming out in the morning at 8. And my title, my working title for today is Who's Going to Block Vita Vea?
Right. Yeah. Well, yep. there's probably about 3 people on the planet that can. Hopefully the Falcons got one.
Which skyscraper are you going to use to put stick in front of that big man?
Yes.
could be very interesting. So yes, check out the Bowtie Chronicles podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast, wherever you get this podcast. Check that out as well, because we love D. Orlando. He is the man. D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. D. Orlando, thank you again. We will talk to you in December when the Falcons and Bucks clash again. And enjoy this week.
All right. Thank you, Steve and Ren. Thanks for having me. And you all enjoy the week also.
We certainly will. Thank you,
D.
Orlando. Thanks,
D. You're the best. Appreciate it.
Thank you all. Have a great one.
And that is D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's so funny.
He's great, man. I'm so glad you found him.
Oh, I've known D. Orlando a long, long time. So, yeah. as I mentioned, he's one of the smartest guys, smartest pro football writers that I know. Former lawyer. Yeah. So, yeah.
Talk to him for 5 minutes. I'll let you know that.
Yeah,
I used to be a lawyer. He's very proud that he was the past president of the Pro Football Writers of America.
Yeah,
he showed us his plaque last time he was on.
That was.
But what did you glean out of that? What's something that he said that you're like, huh, or hmm, or that makes sense, or really?
Well, I think the fact that it seems like the even the media in Atlanta is starting to push the panic button already.
I think it started when they drafted Kyle Pitts and passed up on Fields.
Yeah.
When they passed up on Fields. I think it started there. I was like, I didn't see any of the Falcons game. All right. Like, since the Bucks didn't play Sunday, they played Thursday. I was working all day Sunday. So I didn't see any of the games. I was surprised about how well their running game did early on before they fell behind. But yeah, it's not gonna, it ain't gonna help. I mean,
the running game was big in their first two drives. Again, their first two drives were a 14 play drive and a 15 play drive that both went over 70 yards, and they both took very, very, like, they were like 5.5 or 6 minutes each.
Just plotted down the field.
They really stuck run, and Mike Davis and Cordero Patterson really was a big part of those first two drives. And then all of a sudden they're down 14, or they're down 7-6, and the Falcons go and score a touchdown late in the first half. And then with the penalty, they go for two and they make it 15-6. And at that point, it was all passing at that. After that, they only had four rushes in the second half total. They were all by Mike Davis.
So as a Bucs fan, I guess you got to feel like, you know, that's pretty good. It's like, you know, if, you know, the Falcons running game is a glacier and, you know, big, immovable, slow moving, can't break it. But if you're bringing it to, you know, a wildfire in California, it ain't going to do so well. And I kind of feel that's sort of like it's the immovable object against the unstoppable force.
Yep.
But the immovable object, which is the Bucs run defense, has proven to be the immovable object for 2 years straight. And the Falcons have what, one quarter of being the unstoppable force. So
yeah, quarter and a half.
Yeah, I love that matchup, you know, coming into the Bucs. Like you pulled up the guard spot, it's going to be a problem. You know, obviously Orlando thinks Vita Vea is going to have a great game. I think Vita Vea is going to have not only a Pro Bowl season, I think he's going to have an All-Pro season. The Bucs are in prime time a lot, and Vita Vea is already getting a lot of run. With no, you know, he didn't have any stats, like no tackles, no assists, like nothing in the box score. But a lot of people are talking about what a great game he had and how important he is to this defense. And now we got, you know, like we said, D. Orlando is going to write an article and do a podcast on it. So I think it's going to be an All-Pro. But anyway, I kind of expect if the Bucs cannot turn the ball over four times and sort of stick their offensive game plan. Now, it looks like there's going to be a little bit of challenge to the outside, but I trust, you know, Byron Leftwich and the input from, you know, Christensen and B.A. and Brady that they don't have to attack the field on the outside. Like, they got Godwin and they got Gronk in the middle. Maybe O.J. Howard will show up this week. So I feel more confident this game than I did for the Dallas game, just because the offensive line just really seems that, you know, they need to get their eventually somewhere down the line in the season, they're going to improve and get better. Is it going to be week two? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, yeah, that is yet to be determined for me. And it's funny. I was going to mention this on our Friday show. But you talked about Gronk, and we saw Gronk really take charge in when the Cowboys went to cover zero.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that if Deion Jones is blitzing up the middle, if he's doing an A gap or a double A gap blitz.
Sure.
That means you're gonna end up seeing a big wide open spot in the middle of the field, and that just tells you that's Gronk, that is Antonio Brown going over the middle, that's Mike Evans going over the middle. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot of posts and a lot of in routes if you're going to see blitzing and if they feel that's what they need to do to try and put pressure.
And then, you got Tom Brady back there. You're going to blitz Tom Brady? Like, that's your game plan?
Well, I mean,
you're playing the Bucs. What are you going to do? Well, we're going to blitz Tom Brady, and we're going to run the ball. Like, I understand what you do best, but good luck. You know, it's like, yes, like, the fire's kind of hot, Iceman. I mean, I don't want to sit here and bang on the Falcons. Obviously, you know, they had a very poor game. It could be their worst showing that they have all season. They do have weapons on offense. I'm still skeptical of their defense because it was terrible last year and they didn't show much improvement. But D'Orlando says there's some players there. But you know, this is another game where, as a Falcons fan, it's how I felt as a Bucs fan pretty much my whole kind of, you know, life, except for, you know, those little stints where they won, where it's like, everything has to go perfect for the Falcons and they might win.
Yeah.
And the Bucs can shoot themselves in the foot a couple times and step on their own toes and, you know, run their car over their foot and they can still win. And if the Bucs, you know, clean up those penalties and turnovers, like, it could be worse than it was in the Philly game at halftime.
Yeah. You could be seeing your boy Blaine Gabbert getting some playing time if things go that way.
Yeah. Or, you know, like, they could do what the Rams and the Cowboys did, and like what D'Orlando alluded to is sort of like, you know, with the screens and the crosses and the digs in the middle, like you were talking about, like the Bucs could do against Atlanta, and then throw the seam to Pitts or down the edge with Dean. And let's face it, like, everyone said, like, okay, where's the weakness on the Bucs? And you had to go, well, it has to be the secondary because they're so up and down, and they were inconsistent last year. You know, pulled it all together like the whole team did after the bye week and through the Super Bowl and played great.
And now they're banged up.
And now they're banged up. And Bunting wasn't having the best game anyway before he got hurt. So
yeah, he got hurt pulling in, trying to drop was Amari Cooper for a touchdown.
So. Yeah. Friendly fire, man. And remember, the Falcons weren't that good last year, and we were down 17-0 at that time. So, again, I've been giving Sunday, but again, this is a game. If the Bucs, you know, don't shoot themselves in the foot and sort of play their game, again, this could be over early. I feel like I'm going to say this a lot this year. This one could be over early.
Yes, so. this could be the Lions last year.
Yeah,
where you're getting, you know, you're going to get Blaine Gabbert and O.J. Howard some significant playing time in the second half. If all goes well, that would be a great thing to see.
Speaking of O.J. Howard, what, you know, do you expect to see a little more of him this week? And what would you like to see from the Bucs this week?
Let me think here, because for me, will we see more of O.J. Howard this week? I don't see how you could see less of O.J. Howard.
Is the Cowboys defense going to improve? Well, it can't get any worse. So, yes, it's going to improve. Yeah. They can go from 32nd to 31st.
Yes. I think we will see more of O.J. Howard. I'm not saying he's going to get you know, 25 snaps.
Right, right.
I don't think you're going to get to that point. But I think you could see him in there for, you know, 7 to 10.
Get a target.
I think that'll be the best thing for his confidence, is if you can get him somewhere between 7 and 10 or 12 snaps, get him a target or two, and let him get the feel of getting back in the rhythm of the game. You know, it's real difficult for somebody like him to be able to get into the rhythm of the game if he's not being targeted. If you're just using him as a second blocking tight end to try and give Gronk an opportunity to go down the seam. Give OJ an opportunity to get an in route. Give OJ an opportunity to sit down in the middle of that zone when Deion Jones is blitzing, and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. Some other things I want to see, of course, I want to see Ronald Jones bounce back. I'm not sure how much I sort of believe this hubbub, this gobbledygook about, you know, not taking it well, and that's why I didn't play him. And quite frankly, I don't care. Like, you know, we've seen it before. He fumbles, he gets benched. He's fumbled and didn't get benched, and then rewarded the team with a 98-yard touchdown. So, I really don't, and I don't mind him benching him and or Fournette, or benching any player, really. To be honest, I mean, I don't want to be like an imperialistic, you know, regime where, if, you know, like, oh, false start, you're on the bench, you know, for the rest of the, like, none of that stuff. But I want to see, you know, Ronald Jones bounce back, the running game be more active. I love to see Gio a little more active and a little more plays. I want to see OJ Howard. I like to see OJ Howard get like 6 targets. I really would. And especially if the game, you know, as we hope it does, Bucktown gets out of control early, sort of like, you know, get him in there, put him, as they say in baseball, in a non-high leverage situation. I want to see Jamel Dean, see how he's improving. I'd like to sort of, if it does get out of hand early in this, you know, and the Bucks are in control, I would like to sort of see a 3 safety look and see Edwards and or, Winfield in the slot to see what they can do there. Because look, I like Cockrell. I think he's a great fourth corner in the NFL, but he's a fourth corner in the NFL. And you saw him just couldn't keep up, you know, with the Dallas receiver in the game. And it was just a simple, you know, it was a little shoulder fake the outside, boom, put his foot in the ground. And then there was 4 yards of separation touchdown. So, you know, I want to sort of see that. So maybe the Bucks have more than just one answer there at the slot position, because SMB went on IR. So that's 3 weeks minimum.
Yeah.
So we won't see him till, you know, week 5, the earliest. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And everything else, you know, I want to see I think the defense is going to get a lot more pressure. I think Matt Ryan's not, I think he's one of those guys that will hold the ball a little longer than he should. And so I expect some sacks there. And the offense, like, they're just going to roll. Like, just quit fumbling the ball, quit passes off your face mask. And they're, death taxes. Bucks put up 30 plus.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll definitely get into more of that on Friday as well. Once we get a full week of practice in, you know, here we are on Wednesday. So we've got a Wednesday practice, a Thursday practice, and a Friday walkthrough for the first time here in the regular season. So it should be a lot of fun. When Friday comes around, when we can talk about what happened during the week of practice and what we expect to see, knowing who got what when it comes to reps. So should be interesting. Plus, we got other stuff to talk about.
We do have other stuff to talk about, but you have to wait till then. I've got to go get my eyes checked. So,
yes,
we wrap this up, and sorry for being a little short. 40 minutes isn't a little short, but for us it is. Yes. And so let's wrap this up. And once again, my thanks to Dear Orlando. I love that guy. I think he's hilarious.
Yes, he is. So thank you to D. Orlando Ledbetter. And as we get out of here, Ren Addiction.
Best place to find. I stepped all over you. Please try again.
All right, let's try this again. The Ren Addiction. Ren, where can they find you?
Best place to find me is on Twitter, @ThePeterCast. I'm always down to talk Buccaneers football. But if you don't want to put your tweet out there because it's too hot for the Twittersphere, feel free to slide in my DMs and we'll talk Buccaneers football with you there as well too.
And you can follow me at Steve Carney. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, stpete9.com for a Rays talk. Of course, petercast.com, petercast.live. And thank you to the Fansided Network for being a big part of the Petercast. So until Friday, Randy, you ready?
I am.
All right. Go Buck yourself.